Hello and welcome, 8123 Podcast.
What's up?
We are back. Sorry, it's been a little bit. Working on a little secret project here, but
I feel like this is the first intro we've done when we've been next to each other in a long time.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, we got a lot going on. Not sure how much we've talked about the Forever Halloween Ball. I'm sure we'll do an episode on that before the show. But if you don't have your tickets, themainband.com, watch us play Forever Halloween in full, plus a bunch of other songs on Halloween. It'll be awesome.
Have we played every song on that record?
I believe we have, yeah.
Just not together.
And yeah, some just acoustically and stuff, so.
Fun.
Yeah, and then we got a bunch of other things planned around Halloween. It's things are about to kick back in gear here. So
for sure,
if you're into what we're doing, which you probably are, if you're listening to this, then yeah, that'll be coming your way soon. And then today we talked to Travis Clark of We the Kings on the podcast about lots of things, being in a band for this long as they have been, and music and writing music during this time. So yeah. It'll be rad.
I'm a little surprised we hadn't had him on before.
Yeah.
We've definitely toured a couple times with them. Or just, I guess, Warped Tour. Yeah. We've had the podcast. But, ha! Warped Tour. We talk about that, too.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we will get into our conversation with Travis from We the Kings. I guess I should say, if you are listening to this episode because you found it through We the Kings, we are members of the band The Main.
Yes.
We generally don't mention that because we like to think we like people to think that we're just professional podcasters.
Yeah, we're super duper podcasters. Yeah.
So anyways, we'll get into our conversation with Travis. It's a good one. But first, a message from a sponsor.
That's great. My wife and I are doing some renovations in our house right now.
Oh, nice.
As well. And it involves a lot of painting. But we just found, it's like an HGTV show. We just found like black mold in the baseboards, which is, I'm grateful that they found it because, you know, with my girls like running around, I don't want them breathing that in. So, but yeah. It genuinely feels like I'm part of one of those episodes. It's really cool.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. What's happening with you guys?
We're split in two right now. We are We the Kings as the band and We the Kings as Five Dads.
Yeah.
So it's actually, I always feel bad saying this, but it's been a really like amazing 2020 selfishly.
Yeah.
Because like you guys are the same way. Like we tour for a living. We're rarely ever off tour. Mm-hmm. So what that means to us is that we've had more time at home than we have in the past 13 years. And we actually get to see our kids grow up. Like the milestones that we were missing, we now get to kind of be a part of. And it's really, really amazing. So the dad side of We the Kings has been really nice. The band side is a bummer. You know, I miss the guys a lot because we're all living in different cities right now, and I miss the road. We just did like a music video, and you know, because of everything that was happening, we couldn't get, you know, a film crew, and didn't want people. Some people didn't want to fly, and. It ended up being a really awesome music video, but we just went through our phones and grabbed a bunch of pictures that we had with friends. And the whole time, you're like, adding pictures to this folder, and it's like killing you a little bit inside because of how much you miss it.
So the
band side of things has been bittersweet. You know, we spending less time on the road, but more time in the studio. So it's tricky, man. We're right there with everybody else trying to navigate the times.
For sure. Yeah. It's been kind of the same for me. I just had a daughter on,
February.
Yeah. I'm in the club,
Dude,
on February 29th. So it ended up really has worked out well that I've been now home for the past, you know, should be 8 months here in a couple of weeks. So, it's been awesome to not have to miss a single bath time or a single, single anything. And I was expecting, you know, to be on Sad Summer all summer, and then we're going to do shows in the fall. So it's, ended up, it's tough to not be able to play, but it's obviously incredible on a personal note. So.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. I'm happy for you. That's really rad.
Thanks, man.
What's cool is you'll notice that you're going to be playing music now once kind of the world resets and we get back to being able to tour and where people are comfortable going to shows. You'll notice that you start playing and you're playing for different reasons. You know, now it might be you're playing so that your daughter comes to a show and is sitting side stage and is like, "That's my daddy. He's up there playing drums." And you want to be like an all-star hero to your daughter or to your kids at all times. So, you're up, you're in for like a really big change in a good way. It's cool.
Sure. Yeah. I'm pumped, man. So,
Matt, I didn't ask you, did you pick if she's going to be February or March?
Well, for like her birthday parties and stuff.
Yeah.
We'll do it in February, just so at least it's the same month. But
wait, is it, was she born on leap day?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm
really mess with her and change it all the time.
Yeah. I'm just imagining like in school, like there was this kid when I was in middle school that was like born on a leap year, and we'd always make fun of him. And when he was in high school, you know, we'd tell him that he was only 6 years old or whatever.
Yeah. You've only had six birthdays legitimately.
Yeah,
prepare her for the hardships of the world.
Yeah, if that's the only thing that she has to face, then we're good.
Yeah, but yeah, me and Garrett were kind of talking before this, and you know, you mentioned, you know, being on tour for the past 13 years, and I guess kind of what I wanted to begin with is just the like longevity. I don't think that in 2008, you know, when our bands were kind of first happening, and you guys were a bit, you know, you guys were probably a year or two before us even, like, you know, when you guys started to have success. And I don't think that anybody would have expected our bands to still be around now.
It's interesting because, you know, we've each been on tour, not only together, but we've been on tour with other bands that have come and gone, and very, very talented people, you know, incredibly talented. I always say this, and I truly mean it. There are so many more talented, better at their instruments, better at their craft than we, the Kings. So I'm right there with you. Like, right when we first started, like the kind of the kid inside me was like, we're going to last forever. Mm-hmm. But then once the reality hits and you're on tour and you're seeing these bands kind of blow up and then they go away forever, you're like, oh, maybe it's not permanent. I mean, you got to keep working at it. But there's really, it's rare. Like Maine and Kings, that's a rare thing to be a band that long, and it's really because the fans, there's still fans listening to us and mm-hmm. and things like that.
Yeah, no, it's something where I feel like back then it was very much looked at like our bands were part of this fad, this
in and out
beyond MySpace emo fad or whatever. And even like within that world, it wasn't like either of us were the biggest of the bands, you know?
Right.
It's something that I couldn't have expected to happen the way that it has. Do you remember like a time when your focus like kind of shifted from a short-term thinking to thinking about the band as a long-term like career? Because I mean, to me, in the beginning, you're feeling like anything is possible. And
right.
you think that maybe you're going to be playing to 30,000 people in a night. And like, there's these tiny things that pop up and you feel like, oh, that might be possible. And then there's this time when you're on your third record, or your fourth record, where not that you don't have those ambitions, but mm-hmm. that you start to think about it more of like, what's best so we can do this forever, as opposed to what's best for right now.
Right.
Was that a hard thing for you ever? Or
I think we had we've had a couple moments like that. I think genuinely the entire band, I'm more of like the hopeless romantic dreamer type thing. So I think I've always had the mindset of the longevity of the band and of music. But there were times, or there have been times, that it kind of reaffirms my dream and my, you know, fantasy of being in a band for forever. And I think one of the big things was always Warped Tour, because it wasn't necessarily up to our band or any one band to draw the fans. It was always like Warped Tour was kind of a thing that people would go to every year, regardless of who was playing. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of a cherry on top if it happened to be some of the bands from the scene that they liked listening to. So I remember I think we played Warped Tour probably every year that you guys did. Yeah. But I remember, you know, after like the rise of Check Yes Juliet, you know, we weren't sure if we were ever going to have another song like that, which to us probably meant at the time that like, oh, we might not be playing in front of the size of these crowds because we don't have a song that is equivalent to what Check Yes Juliet did. And then I think two, three, four, five, six years after, you know, we were doing those summer work tours, and there was still like the crowds were kind of growing and growing and growing. And I don't think that we necessarily expected that, to not have music that was kind of expansive as Check Yes was, but still having the crowds grow.
Yeah.
So I didn't think that we had expected that. We probably always just imagined that we would plateau at some point, hit that ceiling that a lot of bands have hit. And then, you know, whether we had something that tipped it over the edge and kind of burst through that ceiling, that was left to be, you know, determined at a future date. And it was a little hard to kind of like to cope with that. And there's a lot of pressure with releasing songs, knowing that every single song and every release that you ever put out is going to be judged by the masses. Because music is so opinionated, it is a judgmental thing. You either judge it and you're like, I like this, or you judge it, you say it's okay, or you judge it and you're like, I don't like this, unlistenable, like whatever it may be. So I think that was always the hardest for us to kind of wrap our heads around. And you could tell like in the writing process where there were times where we were writing for like right now, And then Taz, we were writing because it was just what we wanted to do.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. It's something I think you guys, to me, are an interesting case, with a band where you're kind of this, like, I want to say, like, there was a time period where you guys weren't touring probably as much as, like, our band was, you know? And then you guys kind of come back, and then you would always be bigger. Like, every year on Warped Tour, it was like,
probably the biggest crowd on the Warped Tour that year. It was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
You know, we got lucky a lot of the times and had, like, a really good time slot. As you guys know, that is a big thing. No matter who you are, if you play at noon or 11:30, your crowd is not going to be awesome.
No,
we did a whole thing one day where we would always complain. We're like, we feel like we're fucking opening every single day. That's what. And then Tanner, our tour manager, he, like, went and got all the slots we had, and we were, like, right in the middle, like, all the time. But in our heads, we're like, we're fucking opening again and again. And but, like,
that's so funny. Because when you would open, for the fans that are listening who don't necessarily understand how Warped Tour works, you know, basically, Kevin Lyman, who ran the tour, writes up the slot list every single morning. So you wake up in the morning and around, like, you know, 9 or 9:30, you kind of get when you're playing. And when you are first, you're like, what did we do last night? Like, who did we offend? what did we break? You know?
Yeah. And then it's also like super hurry up in those morning slots. Like, cause everything then happens, like, right then. And then then you have, like, 9 hours after that where you're like,
nothing.
What am I doing with the rest of my day? Oh, I'll walk by. Hey, We the Kings, there they are. They have the massive crowd.
Well, it's funny. We felt the same way every time that we were, slotted to play first or really just early, first, second. And we would always, like, it always felt like it happened on days that we were violently hungover. And then we realized, like, we were violently hungover every morning.
Yeah.
And just when we played later on in the day, the kind of hangover would subdue a little bit.
Probably start drinking again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, we play in 2 hours. I'll open a beer.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, yeah, I think that there's something really cool about us and Mayday and We the Kings. That there's something, we played a lot of shows together during that time. And I mean, do you kind of feel the same way that, like, our three bands, there's something to it that, like, why are we still here? And you can count on one hand the other bands that were on those tours with us then that are still here. Like, what do you think is the reason that you guys are around still?
It's not even what I think. Like, I know the recipe. It's actually relatively simple. And I don't even, I know you guys well, but I don't know necessarily the inner workings of your band. But I can almost guarantee, I probably can guarantee that this is the same case for you guys and the same for Mayday, the same for All Time Low. You know, like, the four of our bands we have had something special, and I know it to be true for our bands. And like I said, I would, you know, basically guarantee it for everybody, but it's the friendship within your band. Because it wasn't necessarily the reason that bands were breaking up. It wasn't necessarily that there weren't fans that were wanting to, like, come to the shows and listen to that band. A lot of the times we would sit back and we would wonder, like, why is that band stopping right now? Like, they have things that we never had. Like, you know, if we had that fortune or that ability to play, we would do that forever. But a lot of times, you know, as you guys know, there's the ego comes in and starts destroying bands, and then they break up. So for We the Kings, it's the fact that we still like each other, you know, and we're still friends. And, you know, even when we get off tour, like we still want to hang out. It's like, it's a very strange thing. It's why we miss touring. You know, why would I say that I miss touring when that basically means leaving my family, who I love with all my heart? You know, why would I say that if it wasn't something that I was extremely passionate about and with people that I was passionate about? And I know that to be true for Maine and Mayday and All Time Low. It's like, you know, every member of the band, every member of each of those bands, and they're all great people and they're all normal and humbled to the success. And we've all been around long enough where we've kind of had our ego moments. And then we realize, like, you know, we're just band dudes living our dream, and you kind of like settle back down.
Yeah. When times are tough and you're not friends with the people you're around, it's going to be pretty hard to get through that stuff. But like you said, when you're that close and you can count on everyone, you know, yeah, that's how you can keep going, you know?
I mean, think about it. Like, who would really want to leave like their friends and family to go to work essentially and tour for months straight with people that they just hated being around? Like, I would do the same thing. If I didn't like the people that I was working with, I would not work with them, you know, and because I had that luxury. So, you know, it's hard to tell someone like, hey, the secret for success is just being a nice person and being friendly, you know, but money and fame and success, it throws a wrench in that plan a lot of times, and you can either handle it. But like Garrett, you said it perfect. It basically, in those hard times, it really defines like your character as a band and as a unit and as a partnership. Because you can either go one way or the other. You can come out of it stronger as a band, mm-hmm. or you break up. So it's really those hard times that really define the longevity of your bands.
Yeah. And you know, there's all these experiences that, you know, the five of you or the four of you or the six of you in your band, like once you've been doing this for 10 years, there's just so many things that you've been through, from crazy things at the airport to people you've seen and people you've met and so many dumb things that it's like, I would have such a hard time walking away from that and trying to like relate to anybody else, because the things that we've seen, just the ridiculous, funny, crazy things that have happened, you know, the average person has not been through that much with their five best friends, you know. It's
funny, you know, even like with the crew members, like we have really close relationships with our crew members because of that very thing, you know, that you connect in a way that it's really hard and difficult sometimes to be kind of pushed back in the real world when you're home to connect with, you know, some people that have 9-to-5s or just live a different lifestyle. And then you could basically meet somebody who's in another band on tour and click right away,
yeah.
You know, and that's a special thing, which makes it, you know, hard for us sometimes. Like even if we're extremely social human beings, sometimes like you get in a group of people like at a birthday party or a reunion or a celebration of some things, and just like, you don't even know what to talk about. Like, yeah. You don't even know what's happening in the real world,
yeah.
because you've been in this little bubble for so long.
Yeah. Getting off tour and then going to like, a random birthday. Those are weird days for sure.
Totally.
You end up being that guy that I was in high school at the dance when you're just hanging out in the corner and you're like, you're like, I wish they would play music that I liked to hear.
You know? Exactly. And what's nice about those now is having kids, you always have like a scapegoat. You can always Like, I can go to those things and just pay attention to my kids the entire time. And I don't feel like I'm being rude. I don't feel like I'm being, you know, extroverted. You know, I can, I look like I'm being a great dad, you know. Yeah. And the plan is to have them, you know, be my scapegoat.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that whenever I can go to a birthday party again without feeling like
all these. By the way, going through this year.
By the way, all of our friends that are listening to this right now, they're like, "Oh man, he's gonna hear from it." Like, he wasn't really having fun at the birthday party. Oh man.
Oh man, that's good. So, what if were you guys working on a record before the world kind of shut down, or were you done, or where were you guys at in your cycle of things during this time?
Yeah, we had written a lot of music, and we were kind of in the midst of like fine tuning the songs that we had. And then, you know, when everything happened, when 2020 happened, we were like, you know, we made a responsible choice of not wanting to release music. So we basically weren't rushing into releasing music because, you know, We the Kings and The Main are very similar. We release music and then we go tour to support it. Yeah. And in order to respect, you know, what was going on in the world, you know, we wanted to make sure that we could release music and then go play shows and play those new songs live so that, you know, fans can hear them. And we didn't rush to anything. We took our time, and it's awesome because we've never had this time to like reflect on our own music. It's always, you know, I'm sure the same with you guys. You guys release something and we release stuff all the time. And then you hear it like a year later, and you're like, man, we should have done this. You know, now it's like a, you know, extremely, you know, unique opportunity where we can go back and, you know, edit and adjust some of the songs that is so obvious what we needed, that, you know, or the songs that needed things that we just couldn't hear maybe because we were too deep into it.
Mm-hmm. Are you worried of overthinking anything though?
Always. there's a couple things. So there's the overthinking and then there's the demoitis, and those two just battle each other all the time.
Yeah.
And I try as much as possible to be open-minded and go with my gut. And my gut, you know, sometimes fares with the demoitis side and sometimes fares with the overthinking side.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't truly know until you release the song.
Yeah.
And you might not ever truly know, because if
there's only one change,
there's only one. Yeah, if you did change something and it didn't, you know, blow up, you know, you wonder maybe if you didn't change that thing, would it have been a successful song, and vice versa. So you might truly never know. And then you kind of just finish your mindset as like, we should just put out music. You know, this isn't going to be the last song we ever write. Let's just put out music. Cause you know, our fans love hearing new stuff regardless if that verse melody goes like this or that.
Yeah. Totally. And that's what I was trying to say, is like, they'll never hear the other one unless you decide to put that out. It's just, it is what it is.
Which would be a weird thing. You're just like, here's a slight change that was massive in my head for some reason. But you guys decide which one, and then they can't tell the difference.
Yeah. Well, and going to the demoitis thing, it's interesting now because of how, I don't know how it is for you guys, but demos are like, sound really, really good now. It is so easy to make them sound great, where we had just, we're working on some songs, and there's one song in particular where we just couldn't get it right. Like re-recording stuff.
Oh, you mean in the studio? Yeah.
And so we're just like, fuck it. Keep like half of the demo in there. And then all of a sudden it's like, that's the thing that we wanted it to be the whole time. It's crazy how that, like, that wasn't an option.
No. I mean, before you would kind of, when you were doing like pre-production for a record, you would, you would kind of play the song with one mic in the room just to kind of remember parts.
Yeah.
And half now of you're like, right. Like we're just, playing? Yeah, exactly. Like now we're all, you know, kind of fine tuned and as far as like demoing goes, and you can make the demo sound really good. And then you get to the point and a lot of times there's something like very magical about that demo process because you weren't trying that hard.
Yeah. You know,
and for some of us, like, you know, you're lucky enough to where it comes natural. And the harder you try, ironically, the more confusing it gets and kind of the less quality might come from it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of our songs, Sad Song, I did the demo of the vocal one time through and I could not replicate the, you know, quote unquote magic of that vocal. And so even though it was less, you know, quality, you know, I sang it on a less expensive microphone, you know, in my room at my house, there was still something about it. And you're right. Like Garrett, like when we put it into the music, you're like, that's it. You know, like, mm-hmm. you know, I know it's kind of like taboo to use a demo or whatever, but why is it, you know, why yeah. not use what feels better?
Yeah.
And then that song ended up becoming bigger than, you know, Check Us Julian. And that was, you know, it's funny, you know, going back to what we were saying, like, I wonder if we used the other vocal, would it have the same outcome or, you know,
yeah,
we'll never know.
Wow. That's great. So are you guys now, or I guess kind of before the pandemic and into now, when you guys are making records, are you doing it kind of like how you would back in 2010 or something, where you're writing a bunch of songs, demoing, pre-proing, picking the songs, going in and recording it all at once? Or are you guys just kind of like recording at home on your own and you're working on a song and then you'll get together and do some and do another? Is it?
Yeah, it's so different now. We originally we were all living in the same city and then we all met our wives and moved to wherever they were from. So it's just been different, and it's not better or worse than it was. It's just, you know, we are able to grow with the times. And this happened before the pandemic. You know, the last couple records we were doing from different areas, and we noticed that we didn't really have like a lack of connection when doing the parts, because it was similar to, you know, before the pandemic, we were able to like use soundcheck as like kind of like figuring out how, you know, what we wanted to do in each part of each song. And we had so much downtime, you know, outside of playing the actual show and, you know, doing a meet and greet or whatever it may be, that we could sit and talk with it for a while. So the only thing that's changed is we just don't have that ability to sound check it and to hear what it would sound like live. Cause that's always been like a big part of every single song we've ever written. We're like, how would this go off live? Would it be boring? Is there something that we should interject into the song to make it exciting or to make a fan moment? Should this vocal be a gang vocal, so the fans have something to like do at this moment? And that is probably the one thing that's changed. So interestingly enough, I wonder if this next record that we're getting ready to put out, I wonder if it'll be less like fan involved, because we don't have that ability to sit with each other and think that. Of course, we'll still think that, you know, in our separate homes, but yeah, you know, it's just, we'll see. But it's been different for us for a while, even before the pandemic. And, you know, I think we prefer the old way. I think we prefer being in a room together and doing it, because it's a time, like, you know, before we even started, you know, our bands, there all these, you know, DVDs would come out of like in the studio, behind the scenes, like, and you dreamed of being in a multi-million dollar recording studio with a big board and an engineer and, you know, all this stuff. And then you had the little chart that you would put stickers on, you know, once you got that part down. And I missed that. I really do. Like, I missed the excitement of making the record that way. Yeah. So I think if I were to speak for everybody in the band, I think we would probably prefer it the other way, but at the same time, that would mean, you know, taking more time away from our families on downtime from tour. Yeah. So it's like, hey, we're back, but we got to go make a record. See ya. You know, so it's tricky, but you know, We the Kings has always been really good at adapting to whatever climate and times that we're currently living. And, you know, another, you know, attribute of why we're able to still stay together.
Yeah. That's something for us that even now, like when we've been working on this record, we were all in Arizona, but we got an Airbnb and we all lived together to make the record, just to like have that thing where it's like, we can be like talking about it at 2 o'clock in the morning while we're hanging out. We can be like just working on it at all times. And that's like,
well, there's nothing better than being able to bounce off an idea off somebody, because everybody in We the Kings has a dare to suck mentality, and you don't really know if it's going to suck until you tell like your best friend reaction, who knows you better than anybody else. And you're able to, you know, either it's like, oh, that's a great idea, and then it kind of snowballs into a bigger idea, or
Well, that what you just did, that face, is so important, of like just being in the room together. You can quickly know if it sucks or not by someone being like, ugh. Or, but like, if you're not together, it's less likely that you'll get that quick, like, that sucks thing.
Right. Because then you start like everything, like, if I say like it sucks, is that being too mean? Is that discrediting like him as a songwriter, you know? And, but you know, it goes back to the friendship thing. You know, when you're that close with somebody, you can be truly honest and, you know, boldly honest sometimes. And you just know how to take that from your best friends. You know that it's coming from a place of love. Like, they're not saying that
to make it worse.
You know, everything you write is, you know, horseshit. It's like, they're just saying like, hey, you can beat this. You can, it can be better. I've seen you do it before.
Yeah. And then you've been doing a lot of like outside, songwriting and stuff too, right? Like outside.
I have. Yeah. It's been really fun because, you know, I get to kind of be somebody else, you know. It's nice getting to write with other people and kind of like learning about their lives and trying to kind of imagine life in their shoes and seeing what comes from it.
Yeah. And that, how much of your time is working on that versus working on We the Kings music? Is it?
It's probably half and half. Yeah. Because it's interesting. Like the outside songwriting comes in like waves, and you kind of work at that in that moment. And it allows you to not have to like make an appointment to write a We the Kings song. You know, it can, you know, the Kings songs can come at any time. And, you know, I built this like little studio in my house, and I'm able to just come in at any time and just jot down ideas or a lot of times just like come up with a full song and, you know, make the skeleton of it. And I think, you know, there's passion in both. There's passion like to help somebody else. If I can be of any help, if they see any value in anything that I write, then it's really nice to help them achieve that song and help it come to life. And it's also a really awesome experience for me because I can learn a lot. Like there's really great songwriters, but there's no songwriter that knows every trick. And, I think because sometimes songwriting isn't about the trick. It's just about like everything you've done in your life to lead you to that point, to have that emotion. And a lot of songwriters just might not be able to experience and have the empathy for that emotion. Mm-hmm. So you can really it's really cool what I've been able to learn from every single session I've ever been in, regardless of the size of the artist or the talent of the artist. You know, it's really cool. I always go in with, like, you know, an open mind and open ears, and I try to, like, take something from each session, and then I apply it to We the Kings. So, you know, We the Kings is ever evolving from a songwriting aspect.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And yeah, it's one of those things. I think, you know, for us, it was something that John, like, we had done some co-writing, like, early on in the band, and, like, it was like a thing where, like, we felt like we had to, and, like, we hated it, and then didn't do anything like that until now. So for, like, over a decade, didn't do anything like that, you know. And then kind of just if you're coming at it like this is just another person that you write songs with, like a guy in your band, it's a totally different thing. Where, like, when we were doing it in 2009, it was like, you have to do this
with 40 year olds who don't even know who your band are, and, like,
yeah. Yeah, it always, you know, when we were starting, like, I think you nailed it. When we were starting, we had no idea, like, what a co-write was. Yeah. You know, hey, a record label wants to sign you, and this management company is got you in touch with them, and they're booking you a co-write, you know, thing, you know, session. Yeah. And you're just kind of like, wait, what was that again? Like, yeah. We already have songs. Yeah. You know, and
I'm 18. What?
Yeah, exactly. And so it just kind of felt, you know, like and at that time we were being thrown into a lot of different things. So it wasn't just co-writing. It was playing, you know, morning shows and doing interviews and doing, like, a lot of stuff that we didn't really know went on in the music industry, where, you know, you're visiting radio stations and magazines and trying to win their favor. And it just kind of felt like it was part of the agenda and what you needed to do in order to make it as an artist. And at that time, you know, when you're a kid, you're just like, I'll do anything. Like, if, you know, writing with, you know, these guys is something that is normally what you do, then I guess, you know, you just don't really say no to it because you don't know that you can say no.
Yeah.
That's it. You just don't know you can say no. So you're just like, cool. And then you realize, I don't want to do that anymore. That's weird. And then you become yourself.
Yeah. We were really lucky. We had a really good initial, very first co-writing experience. We've also had bad ones. But I think because our first one, was such a great experience, especially because we were, like, a little anxious about, like, what a co-write was. And I think it's probably why I enjoy now, like, from the flip side, why I enjoy writing with other artists. But it's, I think, and I hope that when I do write with other artists, like, they come out thinking, like, hey, that was, you know, I didn't expect to write with other people, but that was a really great and valuable experience.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So what's happening next for you guys? You just kind of gonna finish, or is the record done, or are you guys still?
It's we're basically finishing song by song and then having it mixed and mastered and just putting it out. And once, you know, once people feel comfortable with going to shows, we'll release not only the singles that we have released so far, but we'll tack on the rest of the record and call it an album. And then be able to tour off of it. But I think it's going to be, like, a really long time. Like, I hope it's not, but yeah. I think it's going to be a really long time for people to, like, our crowds are, like, the exact opposite of what people are trying to do for COVID. You know, our crowds are people jammed in together like sardines, as close and as tightly as you can get, screaming words which by extension is just basically spitting on everybody else, and crowd surfing and touching and things like that. And it's amazing. And it's incredible to see people united under music, you know, from all different backgrounds and ethnicities. And it's an unreal, beautiful thing. And I don't know if, you know, there will be plenty of people that want to get back to that and don't mind getting in a room like that, but it's just going to be different. We've had a couple opportunities to do like the drive-in car thing. Yeah. And we turn them down. I go back and forth, but it's only because I'm looking at it from a, you know, contrasting perspective, where I'm so used to the thing I just explained, like the crowds of people, that I just don't know if it's going to be the same, if I'm going to feel the same way. And I don't want to lose the passion that I feel for live shows. Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to feel like we have to do it because that's just what it is. Like, it's just work. So, I go back and forth, but yeah, I think it's gonna be a really long time. Like, even after venues open up at full capacity, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that 100% of your fan base in that city is going to feel comfortable going. Yeah. And what that looks like from there on out is basically like, what kind of bus do you have, and how can you afford your crew if you're not, like, when we got on tour, like it takes 100% of our fan base coming to the shows to sell out the rooms, to buy merch, and by extension keep us going as a band and keep us out there on the road. So if you're not getting that, then you're basically losing money. And I hate that money is a part of it, but it is, you know, it's why we ask our fans to support us, because it does help us continue, one, selfishly living our dream, but it does help us get out there and to play music live. So I hope it's quicker than later, and I want everybody to be safe and protected. But I just don't know when that's going to be. So I don't, you know, the future is kind of undetermined for We the Kings.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like there's definitely going to be a longer period of time of this kind of in between that I don't think people are realizing. Like, For it to go back at 100% capacity inside people in a mosh pit, like,
doesn't that seem so foreign? Like,
I know.
Seems like it was so long ago, and man, I miss it like crazy. But I don't know when we're ever gonna, like, when we're gonna see it again. Like, I hope soon. But, you know, until then, you know, we're going to take advantage of this time and continue writing music together as a band, and myself for other people and other artists. And then, you know, once that time comes to be able to tour, then we'll go out on the road. But there's plenty of things, you know, this podcast is a great example to illustrate the point, but, you know, there's plenty of things that you can do as a band to, you know, keep that fan base strong, which our bands, and I extend this to Mayday and All Time Low, like, we've been able to do. We've been able to always keep a really close-knit relationship with our fans, because we've all realized from a very early stage that the fans are one of the only reasons that we're able to do this, you know, and without the support of your friends, family, and fans, like, you just can't really get off the ground. So I think taking advantage of this time and writing more music, but at the same time finding different outlets that you can connect with your fans, is going to be the name of this game.
For sure. Yeah. And yeah, I think for us, it's just like, why not? Like, we have so many ideas for songs. Like, why do we just have to put out a record every 2 years? Like, why? Like, let's just keep going. Like, I mean, like, even now, it's like, we have a record that's pretty much done. We have bunch of other songs. We've been doing cover songs and other stuff. And John finished up a solo record. It's like, there's so much more music and better music because of this time. So it's like, either you can sit and be bummed and sad and be like, I'm going to wait until things go back to how they were, or you can take advantage of how things are. So.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's, Time will tell. Like, some artists aren't as lucky as our bands to be able to constantly spew out music and new ideas and reinventing your old ideas or thinking of things like doing cover versions or different versions of your songs. And for those artists, it's going to be harder. But luckily, we are the type of artists that has never really had a problem. Like, you know, we all have our writer blocks at times, but it's never for very long. And, and usually it takes something, you know, quick to kind of get you out of it. And, I don't know. I think it's really important that bands hopefully are trying to take advantage of this, but you're right. Like, you can sit down and kind of whine and pout. It sucks. It sucks that you can't tour, but we will never have this kind of time.
I know.
Ever again. So why not just use it to get as much music out so that you don't have to do that 2-year cycle thing. Like, that always bothered me, because right after we would release an album, I'd be like, oh, I have this song, you know, and it's like, okay, well, Travis, in 2 years, it can be the first single. You're like, I gotta wait 2 years for this? Like, what if it's irrelevant?
Yeah. Oh man, that's awesome. Well, I'm very excited to think about the possibility that we could have another conversation like this in 5 or 10 years, because I didn't think that we'd be doing it, you know, when we were on the Secret Valentine tour in 2009, I didn't think that we'd be doing this now. So I mean, it really is I think we're going to be playing shows for another 20 years. I think that there's, we're going to show up at a festival and be parked right next to you guys. Like we were.
Totally. Hey, remember when you took us to the UK the first time in 2000?
I think you're right. And it goes back to something that you said, when you've been a band this long, there's really not too much that you haven't endured.
Yeah.
So if you can get through those things and come out better for it, then the entire time you're just, you know, as a person, you're growing and you're trying to become the best version of yourself at all times. And that ends up leading you to be, you know, a really great band member. So we've been lucky. We got all the, the young, angsty, immaturity, irresponsible stuff out of the way. Now it's just kind of, you know, we really are grateful to have this home that we can always go back to and always express our creativity through. But I agree with you. I think that, in 10, 20, 30 years, until the end of our time, we're going to keep doing it. We love it. And it's why wouldn't we?